Good morning, everyone. Today we are going to begin a new topic, the topic of Hashgacha. And today I think we're going to briefly introduce the idea, and hopefully in coming weeks we'll have a chance to focus on particular thinkers in a more detailed and specific way. I'd like to learn with you the Mahalich of the Rambam, the Ramban, and the Baal Shem Tov specifically. But again, today we're going to talk in more general terms. God's involvement in the world is certainly a fundamental principle of faith. But as you all realize, the scope and the nature of providence is fiercely debated. And Be'ezras Hashem, we're going to study the sugya. I think what's even more important than learning the different shitos is trying to get a mahalech in terms of how to deal with the events, the vicissitudes in our own life, and to try to figure out how HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to look at the events in our lives and teach us how to live. The idea of Hashgacha is certainly stressed frequently in the Torah. For example, when the Torah describes the 10 Makos, the Psukim emphasize that the purpose of the Makos weren't just to punish the Egyptians or to facilitate the Exodus, but to show Hashem's hand in the world. L'man Tedun, L'man Teda Ki Ani Hashem Bekarav Haaretz, your first source sheet, your first sheet on the sources. And the Mefarshim, the Rishonim, explain over there that the Pasuk is telling us to show that Hashem is not just the God in heavens, but Ani Hashem Bekarav Haaretz. He interacts with the world. He's the master of the world. And Nisim demonstrate that. The Rambam at the very end of Mor Nevuchim, which you have in the next source, shows that this is the meaning of the pasuk in Yirmiyahu, Ani Hashem, Oseh Chesed Mishpat Utzdaka Ba'aretz, that I Hashem do Chesed Tzdaka Mishpat Ba'aretz. In other words, the idea that Hashem doesn't abandon the land, but is intimately involved in the land, in our lives. It's not just limited to miracles, but it reflects so much more. Now, of course, the position of the Rambam is quite unclear. He doesn't maintain that there's an all-encompassing type of providence, and we'll have a chance in coming weeks to explore the Rambam's position more carefully. But the idea that even the Rambam and more or less all Jewish thinkers agree that there is some type of hashgacha is certainly very, very fundamental. And throughout Tanakh, we find how people daven and then Hashem answers their tefillos. In last week's parsha, we read about the tefillos of Eliezer when looking for a wife for Yitzchak. The idea of tefillah, which again we see everywhere in Tanakh, presumes two things. It presumes, A, that Hashem is involved in people's lives, and B, it presumes that we can influence that involvement through tefillah. And so the idea of Hashgacha is certainly everywhere in Tanakh, but let's look at one pasuk in particular. This is the next source you have over here, pasuk from Yirmiyahu. G'dol ha'etza v'rav ha'alila she'einecha pikuchos al kol darchei bnei adam laseis le'ish kidrachav u'chafri me'alilav. So I think this pasuk highlights two very important principles. Number one is that Hashem is aware of everything that happens in the world. Einecha pikuchos al kol darchei bnei adam. That's pretty straightforward. God is omniscient. The second is that he intervenes to ensure justice. Laseis lish kidrachav uchafrim alalav. And of course, that last part is much more complex because we look at the world and we see what seems to be injustice. And Bezras Hashem, that's what we're going to be trying to understand. How do we understand? What does that mean? In what way does God intervene to ensure that there's justice? So while we have many psukim in Tanakh that take for granted that there's some sort of hashgacha, as we've seen, the nature of that hashgacha, the scope of that hashgacha, is not spelled out in Tanakh. And in Chazal, which we'll look at next, we do find a more elaboration. As we'll see, though, even in Chazal, you won't explicitly find a more comprehensive approach to the question, though, as we'll see in coming weeks, the Rishonim do. But let's turn for a moment to Chazal. So one very important source is the Gemara in Chulin. You have that over here next. V'Rabbi Chanina, Ein Adam Nokef Etzbal Milamata, Elim Ken Machrizin Alav Milamala. So a person doesn't bruise his finger below, meaning on the earth, unless it was announced in heaven. The truth is, it's an interesting question. Should we translate this as machrizin, as announced, or maybe more decreed? Which one is it? There's a big difference. The simple reading, I think, of this statement is that there is a robust providence. Even small things, even stubbing one's toe, are a result of divine decree. But it's not clear. I could just reflect that these things are announced, meaning to say that God knows they're going to happen, though their cause is random. So it's not entirely clear, but certainly a very important source. Another source, which seems to also presume a all-encompassing form of hashgacha, is the Gemara in Archin over here, Tess Zayin Amid Beis. The Gemara over here asks, Ad heichan tachlis ha'yisurim? So basically the question is, what is the minimal degree of yisurim that should be considered divine retribution? So the Gemara has different possibilities. Amar Rabbi Elazar, kol she'argu lo beged lilvosh ve'ein miskabel alav. So you buy a suit and it doesn't fit. Maskef la Rav Zeira, v'tem Rav Shmuel bar Nachmeni, gedol la mizu amru, afilu niskavnu limzog bechamin, umazgu lo betzonein, betzonein umazgu lo bechamin, v'ad amrit kulei hai. In other words, the truth is that a suit not fitting is a big deal. It's not that big of a deal, but it's somewhat of a big deal. Even a much smaller, more inconsequential event would be considered yisurin. For example, you wanted your wine to be hot, and they did meziga, and now it's cold. Marbred Ravina Amar afilu nefach lo chaluko. Even your shirt was inside out. Rav Vitem Rav Chista Vitem Rav Yitzchak Vamila b'masnisa tana afilu hoshit yadu lekis lital shalosh v'alub yadu shtayim. You go ahead and you're paying for something. The soda machine takes 75 cents, so you reach in to take out from your pocket 3/4 and you pull out 50 cents. Now, there's something very, very inconsequential, very small. It's not a big deal to just put your hand in your pocket and take out a third coin. And Egwar then says something interesting. Dafka shalosh v'al b'yadu shtayim, aval shtayim v'al b'yadu shalosh lo, delaka tircha l'mishdehu. In other words, but if taka, the soda machine cost 50 cents and you pull out 3/4, so that is not considered yisurim, because it's not a big deal to just put back the quarter. So that's interesting. Does that mean it's not yisurim, but it was b'cheshbon, or does that mean that it's random? Now, the Gemara then continues and asks a very important question. The Kol Kach Lama, right? What difference does all this make? Who cares? What's the nafgamina that whether something is Yisurin or not? So Rabbi Shmuel answers, it's to teach us a very important lesson. Kol she'avru alav arba'im yom below Yisurin kibel olamo. Sorry, I cut this off too early. In the Makoros. Anyone who was for 40 years, 40 days, I'm sorry, have gone by, and he doesn't have any form of Yisurin as defined above, so he was Mekabel Olamo, meaning to say that he has lost his schar. That is interesting, right? You would have thought that divine protection from all annoyances is a good thing. And what we see here is actually the reverse is true. Anyone who is spared, even the smallest annoyances, his shoes never untie, he always pulls out the perfect change, is evidently being protected by God to ensure that he's compensated for his mitzvos exclusively in this world. And that's considered bad. In other words, you don't want your schar to be in this world. Elsewhere, the Gemara says that the explanation of Rasha V'Tovlo is that sometimes Hashem ensures that a Rasha who's done some mitzvos will be rewarded in a just way in this world. Now, there's an interesting question, which I think we're not going to talk about now, which is, why is that fair? The idea of that is that Hashem is just. So Hashem gives everybody, if you do a good thing, you should be rewarded. It's just that the question is, where are you rewarded? So Hashem rewards the Rasha in this world. But obviously, reward in this world is not nearly as great as reward in the next world. So is it really fair that the tzaddik should be rewarded in the next world, the Rasha should be rewarded in this world? The brief answer to this question is, as Ramban explains, that Hashem rewards us where we're interested, where we're focused on. In other words, he allows us to choose. And that actually is a central idea in this week's Parsha. This week's Parsha, we find the debate between Yaakov and Esav. What's behind the debate? If you look at Rashi and in Chazal, you'll see that fundamentally they are debating, as Chazal say, they were arguing about Shnei Olamim, about Olam Hazen, Olam Haba. They're difference in their perspective was Esav was approached the world from a this worldly perspective. As Ramban says, his attitude was basically eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we shall die. Why do I need the Bechorah? Vayiv as Esav as a Bechorah. What do I need the Bechorah for? Hine anochi holeich lamos. I'm going to die, meaning when I die, then that's the end of my existence. And Yaakov Avinu's attitude was that he focused on the eternity, not just the here and now. That's the pshat, by the way. The Gemara says that on the day that Esav sold the Bechorah, he did 5 Averos, and it's like the worst Averos. Each one of those Averos that he did was a reflection of this attitude. Of all that matters is the here and now. Just to give one example, it says Bal Naira Mu'rasa. So it's strange, right? Why Mu'rasa? Why doesn't it say Bal Eishes Ish? Especially because, as the Rambam explains, there was no such thing as Erisin. So what's the concept of Naira Mu'rasa? So I once heard from Rav Aaron Lapiansky, the pshat is very simple. The concept of Erisin is that you're an Eishes Ish now based off of something that's going to happen in a year from now. It's a reflection of the future orientation. That your status is different now, even though you're not yet living as a husband and wife. It's about the future. So everything, that's what it says over there, that Esav was kofer b'tchias ha-mesim, meaning Olam Haba, and Alidei Kain, he was kofer b'ikr. That his kfira b'ikr came from a denial of Olam Haba. It's all about the here and now. Hinei anochi holeich lamos v'lama zali b'chora. So Hashem rewards a person in the place where they want to be rewarded. Someone whose whole focus is Olam Hazeh, so they'll be rewarded in Olam Hazeh. someone whose focus is nitzchios will be rewarded with nitzchios. And so the point that this Gemara is telling us is that someone whose attitude is that everything in life is going hunky-dory, they're not even experiencing the smallest yisurim, that should be a wake-up call that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is protecting them in this world so as to ensure that they get rewarded in this world. So what do we see in this Gemara? That even the smallest annoyances, such as pulling out the wrong change, stem from God. And moreover, you see that that's a gift insofar as A, it could be Yisurin is intended either as a punishment. In other words, are you going to suffer in this world and thereby be able to be rewarded in the next world? Or a message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling me to improve my behavior, telling me to change. And even the smallest irritations, the Gemara indicates, are divinely ordained. So halach l'maisa, then what am I supposed to do when I experience Yisurin? What should I do? The Gemara in Erechin just tells me that, you know, what they're for, but what should I do? So here we have the Gemara in Brachos, Dachemet Aleph. Amar Rava, Vitamer of Chista, Imroe Adam Shisurin Ba'in Alav, Yefash Vesh B'maisav. Shenemar, Nach Besad Rachenu V'nach Korah V'nashuva Ad Hashem. If a person experiences Yisurin, his avoda is to examine his ways, to do tshuva, to think about things. And it's very important to appreciate the following. We'll see in coming weeks many mahalchim in Hashgacha. Is it all-encompassing? Is it not? But in a sense, there's no nafkamina, because whether you learn like the Rambam or Rabbeinu Bachya or the Baal Shem Tov, everybody agrees that your response to Yisurim is this, is Yifash Vesh B'maisav. I'm not going to say there's zero nafkamina, but there's not that much of a nafkamina, because this is meant to always be our response to Yisurim. Now here we encounter a very important question, which is, what does that mean, Yisurin, Yifash Vesh B'maisav? Should I go ahead and say, this happened to me today, and I therefore see that Hashem is trying to send me a certain message, so I have to change this or that or the other thing. In other words, is that what we're meant to do or no? These types of tribulations should prompt general introspection, but we have to be wary about giving very definitive explanations of why a certain thing happened. So I believe that the former is correct. Only a prophet can know exactly why something happened to them. And Reb Tzadok shows a remarkable example of how a person could misunderstand Yisurim, misread the divine message. It's a story, a tragic story from the end of Sefer Shoft in Perek Yud Zayin, towards the end. The story of Pesel Micha. So, as you recall, Micha commissioned this statue, and he made this shrine in his home, and one of his sons was the priest. And then this Levi comes walking through town, and his shevet was where the true Kohanim were. And Micha is thrilled. He's so excited. He sees this. Vayomer Micha, ata yadati ki yetiv Hashem li, ki hayali halevi lekohen. Oh, I know HaKadosh Baruch Hu is really excited about what I'm doing. I'm doing this project. I'm making this pesel. And look, what hashkacha, right? We all have read so many hashkacha prates stories. Hashkacha prates. Ah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to make this shrine. How do I know? Because look, he sent me a kohen, a real kohen. You know, until now I had my son. It was a faker. Now I have a real kohen. Ah. So Micha's colossal mistake highlights the danger of interpreting Hashgacha. we shouldn't claim to know why Hashem harms us. How do we respond? We have to respond by yifashish b'maisav. We have to examine our deeds. We can't ignore them either. We have to do tshuva. But that's very different than interpretation or prognostication or the like. Now, until now, we've been assuming that Yisurim are basically, whether big or small, are serving two purposes. Number one is that they could serve as atonement for sin. And number two is that they could be a type of wake-up call to remind us to change our ways. Is that it? Are all Yisurim one of those two things? Are they a response to our behavior and especially our failures? So the Gemara Moed Katan on Chaf Ches tells us that this is not true. That certain, and by the way, you know, I think you have to say this because there are cases where people experience Yisurim where they're totally pure, right? Just look at the suffering of children or certain tzaddikim or the like. So we can't simply say that all Yisurim are a response to Averos. So the Gemara Moed Katan says that actually certain things, such as lifespan, children, sustenance, are lav v'schus atayim nelsa, ela b'mazal atayim nelsa. And the Gemara over here, as you could see, gives us a story that illustrates this. Rabba and Rav Chisda were both equally great sages, and one's life was amazing, and the other's was very, very difficult. And the Gemara says that the only way to understand this discrepancy is mazel. Now, what does mazel mean? So in a later shiur, I hope we'll have a chance to better analyze this. What I'm going to say now is a very brief summary, but it's very important to understand. Mazel is not just luck or randomness. Rather, what it's telling us is that when things happen to a person, let's say sickness, that can happen for one of two reasons. Sometimes it's responsive. And those are the examples that we saw above, like the person who suffers because they've done an Avera and Hashem is either punishing them or sending them a message or the like. That's one example. But other times, Yisurim are not responsive, but rather, let's say if it's a disease, it's meant to allow a person to fulfill their mission in life. Let's say, for example, Rachmana Litzlan, a person is born with a disease. You can't possibly say that those Yisurim are in a response to the things that they did because they didn't do anything yet. They were born with a disease. So that is what we mean by mazel. And the idea of mazel is that it's meant to allow a person to fulfill their mission in life. For example, this particular person, their tafkid is to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu through adversity, to remain committed despite the hardship, to teach others the devotion you have to have towards God, even when things are difficult. So for them to fulfill their tafkid, they have to have that disease. That's what we mean by mazel. In other words, the things that you get through mazel are not random. They're very specific. They're very specific. That's the idea, by the way. In this week's Parsha, Rashi, quoting the Gemara Vamos towards the beginning of the Parsha, says, Lama hayu avoseinu akurim. We find Sarah, Rivka, Yitzchak, Rachel, they were akurim. Why is that? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mesavel, it's filasim shel tzadikim. So what does that mean? That's like HaKadosh Baruch Hu's sadistic and wants him to pray? Rahman al-Islan, right? And it's also saying that it wasn't Onesh. It wasn't Onesh because they didn't do, they were certainly undeserving of that. Rather, the pshat is, as the Ran explains in Drashos, explaining this Gemara, that the suffering that was involved in that infertility caused them to daven in a way that they never would have otherwise been able to do. And that brought a degree of closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they wouldn't have otherwise had. In other words, for them to fulfill their tafkid, they needed this. They needed this. It was impossible otherwise. And that's what we mean when we say that certain things are lav v'schus atalya milsa, ela b'mazal atalya milsa. Schus atalya milsa means that the events in a person's life are reactive. I behaved in a certain way, and so memela HaKadosh Baruch Hu reacts. He gives me certain things. Could be an onesh, it could be a wake-up call, whatever it is. That's what b'schus atalya milsa. The Gemara says other things are b'mazal atalya milsa. Okay, so now we've considered several approaches to Yisurin. Is it possible that they're random? So again, that we'll talk about in coming weeks. We're not gonna talk about that today. But we should conclude this portion of this year by noting that we'll not ever really always be able to understand Yisurim. Chazal tell us in Pirkei Avos, En biyadenu lo meshalvas harishayim velo meyisurei hatzadikim, that we can't understand. And we have to appreciate that we can't always know the answers. And rather, our avoda is that even though we can't interpret what happens, Yisurin are supposed to trigger tshuva. They're supposed to help us alter our focus in life, to change us from a person that focuses on the temporal to someone who's guided by the eternal. And by the way, it's not just Yisurin that should prompt that sort of reflection, but also salvation as well. The Gemara in Shabbos says that if a person escapes a near-death experience like a poisonous snake, they encounter a poisonous snake and they live. So that indicates that the person should have died and due to his averos, and they were saved miraculously. And that has to prompt not just gratitude, the Gemara says, but tshuva. So the point is that we are supposed to appreciate the hashkacha in our life, but even more importantly, to respond to it. So until now, we have been discussing hashkacha. There's lots of hashkacha. Let's even consider the possibility that virtually everything is hashkacha. Are there any limitations to hashkacha? Is everything hashkacha, or are there any limitations? So we're going to look at a number of limitations that Chazal emphasized to hashkacha. Number one is that there is free will. And whatever approach you're going to take to hashgacha, the nature of that hashgacha cannot be something that undermines free will. Free will, as the Rambam tells us, is a basic premise of all of Torah. All of Torah is built off of the idea that we can freely choose Tov v'ra. Hashem urges us, v'acharta b'chayim, but it's our choice. One source that reflects this is the Gemara in Brachos, Amar Rav Chanina, kol bidei shamayim, chutz mir shamayim, shenemar, v'ata Yisrael ma'asham al-kecha shal me'imach ki'im lira. So what is Rabbi Chanina saying? Ha'kol bidei shamayim, chutz mir shamayim. What does your shamayim mean? What is bidei shamayim? So take a look at Rashi over there. Kol abala adam biyad HaKadosh Baruch Hu. kigon arach katzer ani yashir chacham shote alavan shachor hakol bidei shamayim hu. Things that happen to a person, things about a person, bidei shamayim, are they going to be tall or short? Are they going to be rich and poor? Are they going to be smart or dumb? Except for yir shamayim. What does that mean? Aval tzadik v'rasha enu ba al yidei shamayim. Ezu masar biyado shel adam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave that power over to us. V'nasam lefanav shnei drachim. V'hu yivchar lo yir shamayim. In other words, that is not bidei shamayim. What isn't bidei shamayim? About what isn't their hashkacha? Bechira. Yir shamayim. That's up to us. So, the truth is that Rashi's telling us free will doesn't extend to everything. There are many things that aren't in our control. We don't control whether we'll be short or tall, wealthy or poor, as we'll discuss a little later. But there are certain things that are in our control. And what are they? Anything related to your shemayim. Now, an obvious question that this prompts is, how far does this go? Does the fact that I'm free mean that I could cause someone else pain if they're undeserving of pain? Or will HaKadosh Baruch Hu intervene and prevent me from using my freedom to hurt somebody else? This question is a major machlokas Rishonim. I don't think we're going to work on that today. Maybe we'll talk about it in the upcoming Parshios. The Rishonim talk about it, especially in the context of Yosef and the machlokas with his brothers and the events that happened afterwards. But certainly many, many thinkers, including Rav Sadia Gaon, Rabbeinu Bachi ibn Pekuda, the Sefer Chinuch, Abar Benel, Ugra, all assume that there is no possibility that you could harm someone else in the event that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has not decreed that they be harmed. But, one second, let me just turn this off. But there are some who disagree. There are Chaim HaKadosh. Simple reading of the Zohar seems to disagree. That's coming up in these coming weeks' Parshios. So maybe we'll have a chance to return to that question. So again, the first limitation on hashkacha is free will. The second limitation on hashkacha is negligence. And it's interesting, it's Rabbi Chanina again, who is the one who points this out. Rabbi Chanina has a lot to say about hashkacha, and maybe later on, I hope today, but I'm not sure we'll get to it. We could talk about Rabbi Chanina's Mahalich on hashkacha. But again, here Rabbi Chanina again addresses this point. This is a Gemara in Bava Basra, Ksubes. Hakol bidei shamayim chutz mitzinim upachim. So everything is bidei shamayim except for tzinim and pachim. Literally, that means cold and hot. So what does that mean? So it sounds like what we're saying over here is that it's within a person's ability to avoid cold and heat and sickness that may result of exposure to cold and heat. So that is not bidei shamayim. So there seems to be differing mahalchim how to read this exactly. Take a look in the Makor sheets right after here. You'll see we have a number of mahalchim. We'll start with Rashi. So Rashi says, "Tzinim kor v'chom bidei shamayim imbayim pu'anios al ha'adam gzeres hamelachu." Generally speaking, a person suffers, that is, gzeres hamelach, chutz b'tzinim u'pachim shepamim shebayim b'pshia. So, sounds like he's saying, you get a cold, that's pshia. That's pshia. So, sometimes suffering is a result of negligence, and I shouldn't attribute that to God, right? If a person goes out without a jacket and gets a cold, then he may get sick. Okay, I know some people say that there's no association between this sickness and cold, but we'll be old-fashioned for now. Tosfos adds that this idea is not limited to hot and cold, but reflects the general idea that a person has to take reasonable precautions, and if you don't, then you might be harmed due to this laxity. So let's take a look at Tosfos. Hakol b'dishamayim chutz mitzinim v'pachim v'hadi aminan li'olam al yamod adam b'makom sakana ama yachol lishmor atzmo min apuranus. In other words, it's not limited to just tzinim v'pachim. V'haraya chazal tell us don't stand in a dangerous place. V'chein kir natoi da'asur lav or tachtav. In other words, you're not allowed to walk near a wall that's likely to fall. Hasam min hapshia yachol lishmor atzmo. Da'avade should be adul hamis atzmo. A person has in their ability to avoid pshia. And that's really what this Gemara is telling us. And he says a very important line. How do I know? Because it's pashut that a person could kill themselves. That's presumably part of hakol bidei shamayim chutz mir shamayim. So a person could choose to kill themselves. Likewise, a person can put themselves in a dangerous situation. And if they do, then they'll be harmed. Avok shemevi'en alav min ha-shamayim ba'ones i'ef shelo lishmar. But other times things happen to a person and there's nothing they could do to protect themselves. They've done all the reasonable shtadlos that they could do and they still get sick. I'ef shelo lishmar. Avot tzinim pachim li'olam al yavo'u alav ba'ones. Im rotelizar. Except, so what's special about tzinim u'pachim? Tzinim u'pachim, as opposed to other dangers, certain dangers, a person could protect themselves from shia, but they can't protect themselves from everything. Tzinim u'pachim are unique in that they're entirely biyad ha'adam. So that's what Tosfos says. Very, very mistaber. But what's interesting is that though Tosfos takes for granted that a person can harm themselves, Rabbi Chanan over here notes that Rabbeinu Bachya in the Chovos HaLevavos seems to disagree. And according to Rabbeinu Bachya, just as a person can't kill somebody else unless HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants them to be dead, so too, you can't even kill yourself. Let's take a look at Rabbi Chanan. That's which Toso says that you could kill yourself. Were it not for Toso, I would have said that there is no difference between yourself and others. Just like you can't kill someone else unless it was decreed that they should die. Now, whether that's pashut or not is a different story, but the Rabbi Chanan takes that for granted. Hachanami, ein biyadu lahanis es atzmo, in lo nigzar alav shei harik. Person can't kill themselves unless it's been decreed that they should die. We call makom harot seach chayv misa. Now, don't say that, well, since I can't kill somebody unless they are deserving of death, then I should be exonerated for murder. Because after all, I killed someone who was chayiv misa. U'kimoshkaz ramban parshas lech lecha v'da v'avein. Ki ha'ish shenechta v'nechtam b'rash Hashanah l'hariga lo yinake ha'listim ha'horeg oso ba'avor sha'asa ma'ash shenigzar alav. The fact that the listim killed the person whom God had decreed they should die on Rosh Hashanah, that doesn't exonerate the listim from accountability. Hu rasha bavono yamos v'damo miyad harotzeach yivukash. That both things are true. HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows people to freely choose to harm other people, but Hashem would never allow the victim to be harmed unless it was decreed that they should die. So since the crime was freely committed, so therefore the criminal is held accountable. Yet, we shouldn't think that the freedom of the criminal indicates that the victim was undeserving of death. V'u'adin l'horiges atzmo. The same thing is true with respect to suicide, unlike what Tosfos says. V'adai nigzar alav b'rosh hashanah she'harig. If a person dies, it was decreed that they should die. Dim lokein lo haya yecholas b'yad l'horiges atzmo. K'mo she'en b'yecholas l'horig acherim. Im lo nigzar alav misa. K'mo she'kasa hacholas alfavos. In other words, just like a person might freely choose to attempt murder or attempt suicide, but whether or not they succeed is biyad Hashem. That's what he tells us. So Tosfos said that the reason why you shouldn't stand by the leaning wall is because it's dangerous. Pshia, biyadul hamisis atzmo. Rabbeinu Bachya, according to the Rabbi Chanan, would give a different reason. A person may not stand by an unstable wall because it's an avera. Hashem said, do ishtadlos. Hashem said, don't endanger yourself. So that's why you shouldn't stand by a broken wall. Not because be'etzem you could harm yourself or harm somebody else if they're undeserving, but that's the din. Now, what I'm not sure about is, according to this approach, what is meant by tzinim upachim not being bidei shemayim? In other words, I thought he said you can't harm yourself. So in what way are tzinim upachim not bidei shemayim? Maybe Rabbi Chanan is saying that tzinim upachim are the exception. In other words, a person might get sick due to tzinim upachim, but they can't hurt themselves. Unless it's divinely decreed, I'm not sure. Rabbi Chanan doesn't actually, he disagrees with Tosfos, but I don't think he explains exactly how you would read this Gemara. Again, perhaps that tzinim upachim are the only exception to this rule, I'm not sure. I think it's noteworthy, though, that it's Rabbi Chanina, who on the one hand, as we saw in the first Makor and Chazal, argues for a seemingly a expansive view on Hashkacha, right? Ein Adam Nokef Etzba'o Elim Kein Nichraz Milamala, is also the one who highlights these two limitations on Hashkacha. Number one is Chutz Mir Shemaim, and number two is chutz mitzinim upachim. Now, if you take this maximalist approach to hashkacha, so then we have to ask the obvious question, which is, what is the role of hishtadlus? In other words, if success or failure is entirely biyad Hashem, so then why should I even try? If my income is determined on Rosh Hashanah, then what's the point of working hard at work? So one approach to this question, this is what the Ramchal says, is basically that because it's the din. In other words, the truth is, says the Ramchal, I would receive the same income whether or not I work. But as a punishment for the chait of Adam and Chava, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decreed that a person must earn a living. And failure to do so is an avera. It may be that the onesh for that avera is that I won't be given the income that would have otherwise been allotted to me. But fundamentally, there's no connection between my income and my hishtadlus. Let's take a look at how the Ramchal puts this. This is from the Misil Shishar in Perek Chaf Aleph. Amnam, mashiyuchal leshmor asa adam ulatzilo min hamafsidim ha'ela. Hu habitachon, v'hu sheyashlich yahavo al Hashem legamrei, kasher yada ki vada yefsher sheyachzar laadam ma shenektzav lo. So, first of all, this is very important, and we'll return to this shortly. The definition of bitachon, which is sheyashlich yahavo el Hashem legamrei. So what does that mean? Yashlich Yahavo al Hashem Lagamrei. To cast your burden on Hashem. So we're going to have to try to understand this. So let's read on. And bitachon is really one of the hardest ideas to understand what it means. And we'll work on it now. Be'ez Hashem, maybe we'll even return to it next week. Kasher yada. Ki vadai efshar sheyachzer la'adam ma shenektzav niktzav lo. So bitachon means having the awareness that a person will not lose out on that which is designated for them. Ukemo sha'amuzal b'ma'amarehem kol mizonosav shel adam k'tzuvim lo mirosh hashana v'gomer. V'cheinu omer, enam nenogem emucham l'chaveiro, afilu kemalinima. Now, I shouldn't think that I could get what's really coming to you, or that you could get what's coming to me. The mizonosav shel adam k'tzuvim lo mirosh hashana means that no matter what I do more than that which I'm supposed to do, it won't get me anymore. In other words, be'etzem, if I just did nothing, the gzeira, if my gzeira is that this year I'm going to make $500,000, it would happen anyway. In lo, shekadam haknas l'chol v'nei adam, except that there's a knas. What's the knas? B'zeh pechatoch alechem. Asher al-kein, chayev adam l'shtadel, ezeh shtadel satorach parnasa. So the knas, the tax, as it were, is that you have to do hishtadlus. How much? Ezeh hishtadlus. We'll try to define that shortly. Sheken gazar melech elyon. V'arezeh kemas, sheporeah kol hamin ha'anoshi, asher ein li malet minanu. Al-kein. Amru. Yachol afilu yoshevu vatel. So that's what Chazal mean. They say maybe you could just sit around. Talmud lomar b'chol mishlach yadcha shetaseh. You have to do a shtadlos. Achlo sheishtadlos hu hamoyel. Person must remember that it's not the shtadlos that is what's causing me to get that bracha, that income. Ela sheishtadlos muchrach. It's mochach, like we said, it's a tax. The kevan shestadel, so then, as long as you fulfilled, you paid your tax, then you can get what's coming to you. Ela haderech ha'amiti hu darkam shel chasidim ha'rishonim osim torasan ikar u'malachtan tfeila. So what does that mean practically? How much shestadlos am I supposed to do? In other words, once I realize that shestadlos is just a tax, so what does that mean? So he tells you what it means. Torah should be yikr, melacha tefela. The zevzem is kambiyada. You won't lose out anyway, because you could be mekayim that tax even from doing your melacha the ofen that's tafel. Ki kevin shasa adam ktas melacha misham v'hala ein lo ela liftoch the konau v'lo litzdar al shum davar olami. Once you've paid your tax, then you have bitachon. Don't worry about anything. You lose money, you make money. That's Biyad Hashem. Az tishar da'ato pnuya, v'libo muchan l'chasidus ha'amiti u'lavodah ha'tmima. I think it's actually an interesting ha'ara that it's not just that you'll have more time if you take this approach. You may or you may not have more time. Could be that either way, you're going to have to work from 9 to 5. But tisha'er da'ato pinuya. In other words, the difference is that your mind will be free because you won't worry about it. You won't think about it. You'll know that it's just a tax, and your job is to do your shtadlus and then trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what the Mesil Sham is telling here is that there's no fundamental connection between hishtadlus and success. Hishtadlus is simply the tax he has to pay. What if you don't pay the tax? So then you've done an aveira. That's it. Now, Ramchal explains actually a little earlier in the Sefer, you know, why in light of what he said, do Chazal say, let's say, to avoid danger, like we saw in Rav Elchanan? And he answers, you know, let's say a person were to say, look, I have absolute bitachon in Hashem, so I'm not even going to take reasonable precautions. So the Ramchal explains that that is not bitachon. Take a look. This is from Perek Tes. Shama tomar harei matzinu shechiyavu chachamim b'chol makom sheyishmar adam esasim u'shmir me'ula v'lo yasim atam v'sakan afilu hutzadik uval maisim v'amru akol b'dei shamayim chutz mitzinu u'pachim u'mikra kasu v'nishmartim me'od l'nashu seichem harei she'en lachlit habitachon hazeh al kopanim v'hasam amru afilu dvar mitzvah da. Ki yesh yira v'yesh yira. Yesh yira v'uya v'yesh yira shota. Yesh bitachon v'yesh hololos. Ki hine. It's interesting that the opposite of bitachon is hololos. And inappropriate bitachon could be dangerous. If you look, for example, at Sefer Yirmiyahu, so one of the things that people were saying is, we have bitachon, it's going to be good. Kadosh Baruch Hu isn't going to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, he's not going to abandon us, he loves us. Yeah, Taka, looks like the enemies are coming, but we have bitachon. Heichal Hashem, Heichal Hashem, Heichal Hashem, it's going to be good. And the Navi tells them that that's not what bitachon is. He says, look what happened to Shiloh. And they said, yeah, Shiloh is a Mishkan. He says, look what happened to the Northern Kingdom. Yeah, but they know the Beis Midrash. They were defending their inaction with bitachon. But that's not bitachon. That's hololos. Ki hinei ha'adon baruch hu, who Asa es ha'adam bal seichel nachon v'svar nachona le sheyin hag atzmo al derech tov v'yishmar an advarim hamazikin asher nivru le anosh es harashayim umi sheyirtze shelo yin hag atzmo b'derech chachma v'yathkir atzmo l'sakanos hine ein ze bitachon ela hololos v'hine hu chote v'ameh shehu neged ratzon habore yisporach shemo. Hashem told us to be careful. And so if we're not, we are doing an aveira. And so besides the danger that is a result of whatever he's not being careful about, he's being doing an aveira, and that aveira itself will bring him to punishment. It's actually interesting, by the way, because he doesn't seem to be denying the existence of the danger. We'll see. It's a little different than, let's say, the Mahalich of Rav Dessler, who says that Teva is entirely a mirage. From here, it doesn't sound like he's going that far. The danger exists, and that's why he's saying, Be'etzem, there's two things wrong. Number one is that you put yourself in a dangerous situation. And number two is that you've done an aveira in terms of not taking care of yourself after Hashem has told you to do so. So doing ishtadlos then is certainly not a lack of bitachon. It's or lack of doing ishtadlos is folly. But the Ramchal implies that someone who works more than they're supposed to would indicate a lack of bitachon. That would indicate a lack of bitachon. If you take a look at, and of course, Practically speaking, this is one of the hardest things in the world to figure out, right? What is the sheer bitachon? And what is the sheer hishtadlus? Just yesterday, somebody asked me, he has a interview coming up, and, you know, how much hishtadlus is appropriate to prepare for the interview, right? You know, and there's a big nafkamina. For example, morning seder. If, you know, is it appropriate to miss morning seder, or part of morning seder, to do extra prep for the interview on Friday? It's a big shaila. So how do you know? How do you know? It's very hard to know. He doesn't give you clear guidelines. Take a look at the next source. This is from Rabbeinu Bachya ben Asher. V'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael. So this is talking about the Jewish people leaving Mitzrayim. And we should know, there might even be a difference between individual providence and national providence. Here we're dealing more with the national providence. But nevertheless, I think it's going to be very telling. So what does this mean? Al derech hapshat, yatzu Yisrael mitzrayim chalutzim k'anshei tzava hayotzim lamilchama. So they left Egypt warned, armed, like soldiers. One second, the Jewish people aren't like everybody else. We don't need weapons. Derech Torah letzavos shiyisnag adam b'miktzas b'derech ha-teva b'amikra. No, Hashem told us, and here the word miktzas is very significant, that to some degree, it sounds like a small degree, but to some degree, partially, to act b'derech ha-teva b'amikra. And subsequently, Hashem will take care of us. In other words, Hashem told Yoshua to use military tactics. At least it's interesting, not at the beginning. With the Battle of Jericho, it was entirely supernatural. But subsequently, like in the Battle of Ai, which is what this is talking about, I believe. So he tells him to strategize, to set up an ambush, right? Don't just attack head on, but rather use strategy. I could have said that was a lower madriga because of the chait of Achan. It's a different shaila. But one way or the other, Rabbeinu Bachya derives from that story that we need strategy. We need military strategy. We need to do things like ambushes and the fake outs that they did, you know, where some went in the front of the city and threw them out, and then they came from the back, and the whole strategy. Right? If HaKadosh Baruch Hu just did miracles and you didn't need to do you didn't need to do so much shtadlos, why would they even need that? So rather, that we see that we do need to do hishtadlos. Ella shiratan ator b'kashi yase adam b'derech ha-teva kol ma shebiyado lasos v'ashar yaniach b'di shemayim. So what does bitachon mean? That to realize that we have to do our job and everything else is up to shemayim. But here you have a very interesting, a different lashon, right? Here it says, how much should you do, right? How much should you do? Shiyase adam b'derech ha-teva kol ma shebiyado lasos. Everything you could do. And then you should realize once you've done everything you could do, then it's Be'ad Hashem, whether you'll succeed or not. But you have to do everything you could do. It doesn't sound like you should, you know, do 70%, 40%, which is sort of interesting because, again, just the previous sentence that he said, Derech HaTova Torah, Letzavo Shiyisnaig Adam B'miktzas B'derech HaTeva V'amikra. I'm not sure of what the answer is. And all I'll say is what you see from here is that applying this on a practical level proves exceedingly difficult. Because if we do too little ishtadlos, then we're guilty of ein somchan al hanes. And if we do too much, that indicates a lack of bitachon. Excuse me. And what is the proper balance? Rabbi Bachya here is really sending us somewhat of a mixed message. It seems to me, from what he's saying, is that overall, bitachon is much more of a question of attitude than behavior. And oftentimes, the behavior of the boteach may not be different than the behavior of the kofer or the non-boteach. They might go to work and they both work 9 to 5, the same job. It's really a question of their attitude. To better appreciate this, let's just take a look at one example, and I guess then we'll have to stop. The question of choosing a profession. This is a shaila that many of you are grappling with now. How do you pick? So let's take a look at the Chovos HaLevavos. V'kevan shizbarer chiyuv ha-gilgul al hasibos shel al b'nei adam nivar ata ki ein kol adam chayv lachzer al kol siba misibos ha-toref ki hasibos rabos. You don't have to try everything. You have to work for a living, but you don't have to pursue every single path. We're running out of time, but let's skip a little bit, I guess. I'll summarize. So he says that there are many ways to earn a livelihood. Some of them require a little bit of effort, like a store or light handicrafts, and others which are very, very taxing, like tanning and mining. And then he says something very interesting. He says every person prefers a type of occupation that Hashem gave within him the nature to enjoy things and not others. Just yesterday in my shir, I was talking, as we said, to one of the guys about this question. And afterwards, one of the guys in his shir said, you know, he's just had an accounting final. And he said, if there's one thing that this accounting class has taught me, it's that he hates accounting. And someone else said, wow, you know, so interesting, because I actually just found out how much I enjoy accounting. And the point is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives each of us certain traits. We find certain things interesting. We tend to be better at certain things. Oftentimes they're linked. And that should help you choose your profession, not just because if you do something you like, you'll enjoy it, but he says also you could see that as HaKadosh Baruch Hu sending you a message. And then he says, you know, don't be upset if sometimes your livelihood is withheld from you, because bitachon doesn't mean that you'll always have enough money. Rather, you should trust in Hashem and let's read the end of this where it's bolded together. V'yeh bitchono belokim shalem v'lo yazikenu hasibos al hasivov al hasibos lehavas tarfo bahem uma kishehu mechaven bahem belibo umatzpuno l'shem shamayim v'al yachshov ki tarfo muamad al hasiba yedua v'she'em timana siba ha'hi mimenu lo yavo b'siba acheres. Aval yivtacha al elokim b'tarfo v'yeda ki hasibos kulan etzel habore shavos. Yatrifehu b'meh she'yirtza mehen uva'e she'yirtza me'eze inyan she'yirtza. So Rabbeinu Bachya seems to be saying over here that ultimately it's God who determines the degree of success. And therefore, you don't need to exert yourself excessively. You shouldn't think that you should choose a type of job that you dislike, because you know that's the only way you're going to make an income. No, you should choose a profession that suits you, one that aligns with your talent, and one which you'll hopefully enjoy. And later on in this chapter, he tells a story of a certain chassid who used to do his business overseas. And at a certain point of time, he realizes, you know, that what's the point in traveling overseas to earn a livelihood? If Hashem wants me to earn a living, I could do it right here. So a person, the Chovas HaVa'alos is saying, is when choosing a profession, you should consider your talents, your proclivities, and choose a profession that makes sense for you. And if you do that and you dedicate yourself to the service of God, then you could feel confident that a different choice would not have had a better outcome, because ultimately it's Hashem that is the source of our livelihood. It doesn't mean you always get a lot of money, but it means you could feel that if I'm doing, you know, I've done my ishtadlus, my reasonable ishtadlus, then doing something else wouldn't have been better off. And doing more ishtadlus isn't going to help. And that the Chovas HaVa'alos tells you will give you a certain degree of equanimity and calmness. And like we saw before in Ramchal, a certain degree of Yishuv Hadas, because you know that more wouldn't help. Okay, so we'll stop here. And Be'ezras Hashem, I think next week, maybe we'll talk a little more about what bitachon does mean and what it doesn't mean. We'll see that a lot of people have a misunderstanding of what bitachon actually is. Okay, so everyone should have a good Shabbos, and I'll see you soon. Yes.
Do we have class next week?
Why not? Oh, you're saying because it's Thanksgiving. Ah, Taka. Usually we don't have class on the Friday after Thanksgiving. Uh-huh. Okay. Whatever it says in the schedule.
Okay.
But if it's, you're probably right. I didn't think about that. So right. Probably we don't.
Okay. I mean, I'm happy to, but like knowing about it beforehand is also probably good.
Right. I would say check the schedule. And if it's unclear, you could ask Rabbi Taubis, I would guess. And
perfect.
Whatever we're supposed to do, we'll do.
Wonderful. Okay. Have a good Shabbos, Rabbi.
Good Shabbos.
Rabbi, can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
So on this makor we just saw from the Chovas HaLevavos, in the first line, he says, "Kevan sheisbar rechiv ha-gilgul al-asibos al-bnei Adam." What's that referring to?
Basically, it means that why you have to earn a living. Now, yeah, the truth is, we started in the middle. So you have to go a little bit earlier, which you can't do from the source sheets, because it's not whole. But if you go ahead and you look over there a little earlier in the chapter, Rabbi Bachya wrote that there are two reasons why Hashem obligated a person to do hishtadlus and search for the means of earning a livelihood. And basically, what are they? So he says that there are two reasons. Are number one, to test a person to see if you earn your livelihood in a permissible manner. And number two, to keep people busy and prevent them from sinning. So now Rabbeinu Bachya says, since there are these two reasons, so these aren't relevant for someone who is a tzaddik. And therefore their livelihood should come with little trouble and weariness. But then Rabbeinu Bachya says, so then why are there sometimes particular reasons why a righteous individual will still struggle earning a living? And he addresses that. He says, Hine im yomar adam hine anach roim miktas tzadikim lo yizdam in lehem tarfan. El achrei ha'amel v'hayegia v'rabim me'anshei ha'averos b'shal v'chayem b'tovun v'ne'imim. So some people talk, the tzaddikim have a very hard time and the rishonim have a very easy time. Ne'amar ki kvar kadma nevi'im v'chassidim l'achor al inyan hazeh. So the nevi'im and the chassidim have investigated that matter. And he addresses that. He gives a number of explanations why it would be that way. But the basic point is over here, he's modifying. He's saying, in light of the explanation that I give, why you have to do ishtadlus, so that's where this paragraph starts from.
And Sibos here is referring to what? To the work itself? Back in our source sheet in the first line.
Yeah. Kevan Shizbarer, Chiyav HaGalgal, Al. Yeah, exactly.
The work itself. And he says, Ki in kol adam chay lechazer al kol siba mi sibos. What is that?
And he paused. Hateref. In other words, you shouldn't, there could be, right? I could make a living in 10 different ways, right? You don't have to do all 10 or consider all 10. Many ways to earn a living, and so now, even though there is this concept that you have to earn a living, and Hashem made it that way, so that doesn't mean you have to do everything. So what do I have to do? Does that mean I have to choose the hardest profession or the safest profession, the most lucrative profession? No. Though there's a reason why Hashem has, you know, decreed that you have to work, doesn't mean that I have to try everything.
Okay. Meaning even people that have multiple jobs, for them, though, it works, but it shouldn't be too over...
Exactly.
Challenging.
Exactly.
Thank you very much.
I
love this topic so far.
Okay. Shkayach. Thank you so much.
Okay, Shkayach. Thank you. Good Shabbos.
Good Shabbos.